This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The city of Cincinnati's projected budget deficit for the new fiscal year that begins in July now stands at over $90 million. The number had grown by $10 million over just a couple of weeks as city leaders begin to craft that next budget. Cincinnati was among the Ohio cities and other cities in the Ohio Valley listed as more vulnerable to the economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. If you were listening just moments ago, we had Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley as our guest. He was obviously familiar with this new report from Brookings, which described elastic sources of income tax and sales tax make these cities more vulnerable. So let's talk now with one of the co-authors of that new Brookings report, Michael A. Pagano. He's the dean of the College of Urban Planning and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's also a fellow at the National Academy of Public Administration. Michael, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Michael.
And I know we've got some challenging data to discuss, but before we do, I understand you've got connections to Southwest Ohio, so reintroduce yourself to our folks. You spent some time in Oxford.
I did. I was a professor of political science at Miami University for almost 20 years, so I've got very strong connection to Southwest Ohio.
And we do like hearing you again here in the area, because this report that you co-authored has certainly made the rounds. I just had Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley on in the segment before. He had obviously read it because we were able to discuss that with him. I want to start by talking about the chart that you included in this report that listed the cities most likely to feel an immediate fiscal impact from COVID-19. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati is number two, right behind Columbus. Other Ohio cities are on the list in the top five even. Toledo was ranked fourth. Cleveland was fifth. Only Bowling Green, Kentucky split them at third. You've got a whole list of 19 cities, Akron, Louisville, Indianapolis, Lexington, all on this list. Can you talk a little bit about what you looked at to determine those vulnerabilities?
Sure. And let me just make a slight modification to, I think, what's been said, and that is that the cities aren't really ranked from 1 to, I think there are 135 of them. They aren't ranked from 1 to the least vulnerable, but rather they're clustered. And all of the Ohio municipalities are clustered in that most that category that will experience the impact of COVID-19 pretty immediately. And as the mayor just said, a $90 million loss already is pretty immediate. And what we were trying to identify here is if there are, because Brookings had produced another piece that identified some employment sectors that are more likely to be affected than others. What we did with data we've been collecting over the last 40 years is we tried to layer on top of that those municipalities that are going to feel the impact of this very rapid decline with shuttered industries and sheltering in place or staying at home, and what that does to a city's ability to generate retail sales tax and income tax. So it's pretty apparent that if people aren't buying goods that are taxed, that the city or the state or the county would not be collecting a sales tax either. And when people are laid off, they don't have wages, and therefore their income isn't being taxed. So those are felt immediately. But a lot of municipalities in the United States, although none in Ohio, a lot of the municipalities in the United States rely more on the property tax than on the income tax, as Ohio municipalities do, or the sales tax, as other municipalities in other states do. And those cities that rely heavily on the property tax, your property tax liability that you receive today when you're paying your property tax bill is really based on the value of your property of either 1 or 2 or sometimes 3 years in the past. So if you don't think about your economic condition today and think about what it was like last year and the value of your property, that's just about what you're going to be paying to the city or the county or the school district. That is the value of the property a year ago. So cities that are highly reliant on the property tax they're going to be affected immediately, but only to a minor extent compared to cities like Cincinnati and Louisville, Lexington, and Dayton, and the rest that experience the decline in tax revenue immediately because people aren't working and people aren't shopping. Not shopping doesn't damage the city of Cincinnati as much as it does the county, but it's the decline in the income tax because of the loss of employment that the city of Cincinnati and other cities are feeling immediately.
One of the cities that you listed about property tax, Durham, North Carolina, for example, its population is about 275,000. Around here, probably best known as home to Duke University. You note that Durham is among those cities that have a less exposed economy immediately because it's more reliant on property taxes. It doesn't have local sales or income taxes, and then less than 12% of its regional employment is in high-risk industries. But you do note that there could be economic danger down the road due to foreclosures and declines in property values. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. That's absolutely the case. Even though Durham does not have the authority to issue a levy an income tax or a sales tax, and even with other places that are tourist destinations like Orlando and Las Vegas, but clearly when they close down, and even a place like Durham that doesn't have the tourist industry, when they close down, they're going to be affected, even though they only rely on the property tax, but not immediately to the extent that the cities such as Cincinnati are. The reason is that as people are laid off and their capacity to their family's capacity to pay the mortgage, and often if they're paying a mortgage, what usually is required is that the property tax is built into your monthly mortgage payment. If you can't make that monthly mortgage payment, then you're not going to make the property tax contribution to it. And so the effect is that even for those property tax dependent cities, they may be losing some revenue immediately as people can no longer pay their mortgages and therefore their property taxes. And the other part of it is that you have when businesses are shuttered, and if they don't reopen, it's likely that their property taxes will as a liability, they'll go into default, and therefore the city is not going to be able to collect the property taxes from those commercial ventures in places like Durham or Orlando or Las Vegas.
The reason I wanted to jump to the Durham scenario is because we're talking about Cincinnati being among those cities exposed immediately because of its reliance on what you call the elastic sources of revenue, like income tax. But local jurisdictions do also collect property taxes. And while a city like Durham may feel this later, I'm wondering if then cities like the ones that you listed from Ohio and Kentucky and Indiana are not only exposed for this immediate impact, but down the road, there's another one looming as well?
There is. The cities in Ohio are probably among the least dependent cities on the property tax in the country. It's often not more than 7 to 10% of their total revenue come from the property tax. That's not an insignificant amount, but it's not the preponderance of revenue as the income tax provides to us. To Cincinnati, which is over 70% of their general fund revenue. To answer your question, yes, there's going to be the immediate impact of decline in employment and the shuttering of businesses. And then there will be a longer-term impact if the value of real estate continues or slides downward with the economy and doesn't rebound soon. There will be another hit. The hit for Ohio local governments will be more noted at the school district and the county level than it will be at the city level.
So
but it will be felt.
Based on your research and your knowledge of these sorts of things, when we compare municipalities that rely more heavily on sales or income tax revenue for their general fund budgets to those cities that rely more heavily on property taxes, is one or the other better positioned to weather economic downturns in the long term?
Well, I think when you identify two different kinds of cities, one that is highly dependent on the property tax, another one is highly dependent on the income tax, they both have their vulnerabilities. The property tax, if it declines, isn't going to be felt immediately, But the property tax really, because real estate values haven't improved much or haven't come back to their pre-Great Recession levels, property tax receipts have not come in as robustly as you might expect. The income tax is a tax on primarily it's a tax on wages, except it's also on net profits of commercial activities as well. So it's a little more robust than just on wages for Ohio municipalities. But it's much more reflective of changes in the economy. And so as the economy has grown and income tax receipts grow, it reflects the economy immediately. And I'm giving that background just by way of saying that really it's a combination of these kinds of general taxes that municipalities might have access to that provides for a more stable or an approach to budgeting that we might refer to as a portfolio approach. You wouldn't put all of your assets into one kind of activity, such as just in real estate investments, or you wouldn't put all of your activity into something else. If you have a broad portfolio of taxes that you can rely on that better reflect the underlying economy, then the ups and downs of the business cycle could be caught in the ups and downs of the fiscal cycle. But instead, by having a high reliance on just one thing, you're exaggerating. So if you exaggerate on just the property tax side, you know, property values were quite strong in the 1990s and 2000s, and they almost overrode all of the declines or the stagnation in wages and salaries during that period. So the property tax was actually a pretty good thing to have by itself. But now with something that is completely unexpected and unpredicted in any model I've ever seen, where we have 30-some million unemployed within a two-month period, that's the kind of impact that modelers of the financial futures of cities and states have never experienced or considered. It's just completely out of the realm of possibility. So what kind of revenue structure would best balance this kind of thing? I don't know that there is any. But it also means that this is where it's critically important for the federal government to be involved, because the federal government can spend money that it doesn't have for operating purposes. That's but municipalities cannot. Municipalities and states have to operate within a balanced budget environment.
And I do want to talk more about that, because your report does state that strong intergovernmental partnerships are vital. I also want to talk about the other metric that you and your co-author looked at here, which include the metro population employed by high-risk industries. We're talking with Michael A. Pagano. He's the dean of the College of Urban Planning and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Chicago and the co-author of this new report at Brookings. We've got to take a quick break. We're going to come back and finish up with Dean Pagano in just a moment. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with Michael A. Pagano. He's the dean of the College of Urban Planning and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's also a fellow at the National Academy of Public Administration. He's the co-author of a new Brookings report that we're talking about, the economic vulnerabilities of cities like Cincinnati during this COVID-19 pandemic. Michael, thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Michael. Thank you.
The report also looked at, in addition to the way revenues are generated for individual municipalities, it also looked at the impact of high-risk employment population. Can you talk about the high-risk industries that you looked at here?
Well, this wasn't part of the study that we did. This is what we imported from other studies that Brookings had done. What they identified as their the industrial or the employment sectors that are more likely to be hit harder than others and immediately are some of them kind of minor to Cincinnati. That is, one of them is mining, oil and gas. Another one is transportation, the transportation sector in general. Another is employment services. Another is travel arrangements. And the big one is leisure and hospitality. And it's the leisure and hospitality one that was the reason that places like Las Vegas and Orlando were up at the very high end of that employment sector. So those were the areas that analyses that Moody's had done and Brookings had done identified as the high at-risk employment loss areas because of COVID-19.
And so we talked about the Ohio Valley having some cities that appear to be pretty vulnerable. And I'm wondering if, you know, when we're talking about Cincinnati, Columbus, Cleveland, Toledo, Akron, Louisville, Lexington, Indianapolis, all within a short drive from us here, mm-hmm. WVXU, how does geography play into this, if at all?
Geography?
Yeah.
I don't know that it's so much the geography; it's the composition of those five areas. And I think what it's picking up a lot of in some areas, some metro areas around the country, it's picking up on the high reliance on the oil and gas industry. So you know, a lot of the Permian Basin area in West Texas and those municipalities out there are highly reliant on that. That's why they end up high on this on that measure. But for many of the cities, such as Cincinnati, Cleveland, a lot of it is really caught up in that that sector on leisure and hospitality. So it's the it's the tourist areas. It's the summer draws of professional tennis or whatever it might be in the particular area. It's the King's Island draw. It's those kinds of things that bring people in from around the area in leisure and hospitality that they're not going to go there anymore. And so that employment opportunity dries up and it's felt immediately. So it's not so much the geography of that particular area. It's really it's the economic mix that metro areas have created over the last, 50 years or so to diversify as much as they can. And that would include things that are now being affected by the COVID-19 and essentially a travel ban, or at least what we have here in Illinois, where you can't have more than 10 people in an area. I can't imagine there are any tourist destinations that could fit that bill. Part of the economic development activities of municipalities around the country has at least in the last 40 or 50 years, have tried to develop a tourist destination kind of place. So restaurants and activities, those sorts of things, are going to be affected pretty immediately. And that's why these cities, the Cincinnati's and the Columbus, as well, not at a much less impact than the Las Vegas and the Orlando, but still there are entertainment venues that people are no longer going to frequent, at least in the short term.
Why don't I read anything in the report really about Chicago, New York, or LA? Is there something different about the larger municipalities?
Yeah, well, the database that we are relying on is a database that we've been collecting for the last 40 years, and it's really focused on the general fund of municipalities. And if you aggregate all of that together and include New York City, you would lose all of the nuance because of the size of, I believe, New York's budget is $92 billion, which there, if you add up all of the other general funds of municipalities in the country, you wouldn't even get there. So we've always excluded New York intentionally. If we added it, which I have done manually, if we have added it, they also receive over a third of their general fund revenue from the sales and income tax. And of course, New York City imposes both a sales tax and an income tax, as well as a property tax. And it would be classified in the category that we said would be more immediate. But it was an omission only because of the data, but which we were able to include later. Chicago, it wasn't included, which because our focus is on the general fund, and City of Chicago has an odd way of creating revenue streams for their what they call their corporate fund or their general fund. and it doesn't have it doesn't appear as having much in terms of the property and sales tax. So we excluded it because there wasn't anything there. But it's not because the larger municipalities aren't being affected. They most certainly are. As a resident of the city of Chicago, we're being hammered by the shelter at home requirement and by the shuttering of so many businesses.
So we just talked to Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley, and we've got about a minute left. And, you know, he's calling out to the federal government because they can print money, whereas the states and the municipalities cannot. They need help. And your report states that strong intergovernmental partnerships are vital. I just want to read a quick part of what was published. Quote, under the current bill, this is from, I guess, earlier, this was at the end of March when this was referenced. Under the current bill, states and cities should coordinate in unprecedented ways to ensure that measures of local fiscal capacity, including tax structures and the share of high-risk workers, are considered in funding distribution. And you also talk about states allowing local governments to modify tax structures so they are in line with their underlying economic basis. And our last minute, can you help us understand what that means and what that could look like?
Well, yes, and let me put it in the context of the report and other work that I've done, and that is that the general tax structure of the municipalities in the state of Ohio, I hold up when I go around the country talking about them, I hold it up as something better than any other state has put together. And it's because the municipal income tax in Ohio is a tax on both residents and workers. So it extends the tax base of the municipality to include those who are actually using the services that are provided by them when they're working in the city. So the one thing I would recommend is that the state of Ohio, or then the cities, not adjust that part of the tax structure. What I would recommend is that they become not so highly dependent just on that tax, the income tax. They need to broaden their taxes and their fees to be much more of the portfolio that I was mentioning earlier, to have a broader portfolio and not such a high reliance on just one tax. But the municipal income tax in the state of Ohio and the way it's operationalized in Kentucky are the best examples of what municipalities ought to be doing.
When will your city feel the fiscal impact of COVID-19? That's the name of the report published at Brookings. We have a link at WVXU.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. We've been talking with Michael A. Pagano. He's a co-author of this report. He's the dean of the College of Urban Planning and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Chicago. I'll also note that his other co-author here is Christiana K. McFarland. She's a research director at the National League of Cities. Michael, thank you so much for coming on today. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much, Michael. All my best to Southwest Ohio.